pase. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, September 3rd, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. As always, it's international break, Dwayne, and that means a little bit of a relaxing pace to finish the one of the last weeks of summer.
Yeah, although, you know, as we know, as MLS covers, international break doesn't always mean the same thing for MLS teams as it does for the rest of the world. But it does certainly slow down on the European front. Today is Tuesday. Tuesday is for Europe's on this show, so we will get to that in the second half. Big international break, though, for the team I follow most closely in Canada, and club side, and obviously the national team playing as well. So, this should be a little bit better than usual. International breaks tend to be, I like international football every other summer.
I like international football when it doesn't disrupt my day-to-day life.
Yeah, precisely. I like Canada games. Let's not kid ourselves. And I watch the U.S. men's national team games and women's national team games as well. Obviously, I watch Canadian women's national team too. But international breaks are just a little bit more... they can be a challenge for a daily show sometimes, but we will do our best to convey the excitement of international friendlies in September, which is the worst of the international breaks.
Yeah, it's one of the worst ones of the years. Of course, later on we'll talk about our Tuesday for Europe segment, where Dwayne and I will talk about the three games we talked about Friday. We'll look at their results and what do they mean for the early beginning of season in Europe. But let's break down Major League Soccer, our bread and butter. A couple of very important matches between direct opponents in the playoff race happened on Saturday in the Eastern Conference, Dwayne. Let's put the scores on the screen right now. The day started with the Red Bulls versus Colorado. Colorado with their new manager, Robin Fraser, winning on the road at Red Bull Arena 2-0 against the Red Bulls. This is an important loss for the Red Bulls in their playoff push.
No, for sure. I've dropped them below the red line. And you put them back in touch with those teams. You know, it's like crabs in a bucket, right? That famous old song. Well, it's an old saying, but it was an old song for most of us. Although it is old now, isn't it? It makes me feel old. Anyway, every time you're ready about to pull over that top of the bucket, the other crab just pulls you back down in, and everything's just sort of wagging around in the bottom there without anyone jumping up. And that was kind of MLS in a nutshell this weekend. Again, teams, including one in your backyard, that had a great chance to jump ahead and coughed up the bit. TFC with a lead late coughed up the bit. But in this particular case, New York, yeah, I think anyone who thought they were – I was beginning to think that they were clear. They were clear and they were above that sort of muddle, but crabs in a bucket, pulled them back down.
Well, we'll talk about the Galaxy. You know, Galaxy and the Red Bulls have a very similar trajectory this year. And that's something to talk about later on. But no, I do agree. But this was a big opportunity, like you mentioned, for Montreal. Because when I was at Satsuputo Saturday, I had my colleague next to me. I don't want to name drop, but Doug. We'll just say Doug. You know who he is. Dog next to me watching Colorado and Red Bull. So I'm watching that game, watching the result of Montreal. And I'm like, Colorado's winning. If Montreal can... Oh, and Montreal just conceded three goals. So never mind.
Never mind, precisely. Look, yeah, a lot happens quickly. We talked about it a couple weeks ago where the results would have put, I think Montreal would have been 4 points up on Toronto with like 5 minutes to go in both games. That was the game that Montreal lost the 3-0 lead and that Toronto scored in extra time. So like that swings happen quick. And when you're looking at the standings right now, and I'm sure the standings will come up later, but 42, 41, 39, 38, 37 is numbers, positions 5 through 8 right now in the East. And, you know, every little margin counts. Carl Robinson would be happy. Fine margins.
Fine lines. It is fine lines. But I do think it's going to be a fascinating way to finish the season for a lot of teams. Montreal does have a lot of games at home, 3 out of 4 games left at home, but it will be a difficult task for some of the teams that are playing against are good, but Montreal does have only four games left in the league, and that is a challenge. They lost 3-0. They had a big opportunity to overtake DC. They didn't. DC now is back on 42 points in fourth position in the Eastern Conference standings. And that is, for me, a big, big 3 points for DC, because they were falling like a rock. And now they might have found like a little ledge off that cliff to stay and maybe make it through the end of the season. You mentioned 37, 38, 39, 41, 42 from the fourth spot in the Eastern Conference, which is the last spot that gives you a home playoff game, at least in round number one, to Toronto, 38 in seventh spot. Montreal, the first team outside the playoff at 37. So, of course, there was a lot of fans' disappointment, booing, and being really loud after the game on Saturday at Stade Saputo, Dwayne. But we have to say, Montreal, they're lucky that no other Eastern Conference direct opponent teams actually won a game outside of DC, because they could have been in trouble after this loss, and they have to feel at least a little bit of solace knowing that Toronto only got 1 point, New England only got 1 point, and they're only five points away from fourth spot. The only thing is, they only have 4 games left.
Yeah. Points on the board are points in the pocket, as we say quite often. But at this point in the season, Montreal doesn't have enough points on the board. So you got to do a bit of both here in terms of your games in hand. Yeah, it couldn't have been probably the best result outside of their own that Montreal could have got in the weekend to have the draw between New England and Toronto. I think most people kind of look at DC and New York as battling out for that 4-5, and then 6-7-8 is between New England, Toronto, and Montreal. I think that's how most people divide it, although the points are close enough that either any of those teams could rise up, but none of those teams have really shown an indication to want that. New England has cooled off after a great start under Bruce Arena, and then you start to look at who they beat under Bruce Arena. That's to say, there was a couple games against Cincinnati involved in that run. So it was maybe a little inflated. The game Toronto, they had the lead late, and that's frustrating a lot of TFC fans, because it reflects the season in a nutshell. It's not that they played terrible in it, because they didn't at times. It's not that they played great in it, because they didn't at times. It's that they just sort of played mediocre, and for a TFC fan, it is difficult to wrap your head around that, because TFC fans are not used to mediocre. They are used to terrible or great. There's not a lot of in-between in the history of that TFC team. So this is kind of the continuation of that season.
Yeah. 1-1 New England and Toronto was the result, with the New England goal late in the game. And again, the influence on the standings can be seen. New England overtakes Toronto by 1 point. Both are on the same amount of games played, 28, 39 points for both. 1.39 points per game for New England. Toronto FC, 1.36. A very close battle between New England and Toronto. But this battle will go down to the end of the season. And Montreal is still one win distance from a playoff spot. So the panic button isn't pressed. Okay, the cover has been lifted off the panic button, but we haven't pressed it yet. I think the Cincinnati game will be crucial, because some teams are playing in the international week, and Montreal doesn't play until the 14th of September at home against Cincinnati. That's a takeable 3 points, as we would say, but so was the game on Saturday, so you never know. And I have to say, just to finish on Montreal quickly, we haven't seen really the influence of Wilmer Cabrera. At least I hope we haven't, because what we've seen so far from the impact under Wilmer Cabrera has been not as advertised, I would say. I didn't see any players taking risks. I didn't see a change of mentality or a change of how the game is managed. It's very similar to Rémi Gard's situation right now, which doesn't necessarily mean anything, but what I'm saying is, I did ask Wilmer Cabrera if he was looking forward to the 2 week break, Dwayne, because he didn't really, I think he had 3 full practice with the entire squad, because he played 3 games in 8 days since he has taken over the team. This 2 week break will give him an opportunity at least for 4 or 5 training sessions with the club. Montreal is on holiday until Thursday. Training starts back on Friday, I believe, or Thursday. The training starts back from Montreal. So Wilmer Cabrera will have time to work on set pieces and work on what he says is the ability to take risks, to go forward, to not pass the ball back to Evan Bush 25 times during the half.
Leopard, well, the stripes on a leopard, right? That's what we were talking about on Friday. And it's, you know, maybe you can paint those stripes on in a couple weeks. But yeah, it was unrealistic to expect massive changes in this in the short term, which is why the move was always a little strange to me. So I don't know.
So let's talk about it, okay?
Okay.
And this will put things into perspective. And this is just like what I am seeing and what my colleague Tristan Amour is seeing and what he mentioned to me that I didn't know. And then I'm like, oh, exactly. So Montreal's looking for a sporting director. And the name that is talked about right now is Major League Soccer's VP, Lino Di Cuolo, as the potential sporting director of the Montreal Impact. He's maybe the leading candidate right now. Well, you know what Lino Di Cuolo did in 2014 for Chivas USA before the beginning of the season? He hired Wilmer Cabrera as his manager.
Oh.
So that being said, is this a coincidence? Is this an interim? Is this him just for now? Is this him for next year? Or is it related to Lino Di Cuolo as well? Because he hired Cabrera before. He fired Cabrera as well, but he hired Cabrera before. So that's the question. Are those all coincidences? Or is the hiring of Wilmer Cabrera, the lack of search, really, outside of Wilmer Cabrera, he was the only candidate really, really talked about to take over for Rémi Gaud, and the relationship with Lino Di Cuolo, who might be the sporting director of the Impact, is it all related? A conspiracy theorist would believe so. I still need to see the paper trail. But what I'm saying is, there's more to the story, I imagine, than just, oh, well, we'll get Cabrera just for now. It's a small world. It's a small circle. People know each other, and that's not a coincidence.
Well, it's entirely possible that the job's been, there's a verbal offer of it already, and, you know, he can't accept because of his roles in the league right now, because it would be seen as a conflict of interest, right? So, you know, MLS operates that way, as you say, and we're allegedly not saying allegedly anything here, but allegedly there could be a conflict of interest that they'd want to allegedly cover up, and allegedly they might allegedly make phone calls or text messages for with numbers that that aren't allegedly, you know, maybe the normal ones, maybe his girlfriend's number or wife's number or something, and allegedly they might make a decision that way, allegedly, Kevin, if you follow what allegedly I'm saying.
Of course. Or it could also be on the other side, be like, well, that guy we know might be coming back, and we know a guy he knows. Let's hire the guy he knows, and then when he comes, he'll see if he wants him to stay or not. That's possible, too. But I thought for clarity's sake, it was important for fans of the Impact and for fans of Major League Soccer to know that this is sometimes what we see. In 2014, Lino Di Cuolo did hire Wilmer Cabrera when he was working for Chivas USA. Lino Di Cuolo is the leading candidate to take over the sporting director job. And the Montreal Impact, Kevin Gilmour's president, just hired Wilmer Cabrera to take over for Rémi Gaud for the rest of the season. And those are just facts. We'll see where that leads the Montreal Impact for their 2020 season and for the playoff run, if there is one. Let's continue. We touched on it a bit. New England-Toronto 1-1. New England with the late equalizer. New England TFC. What is the goal for Toronto in this international break? Of course, recovery. The schedule this year, Dwayne, it's insane. As much as Wilmer Cabrera didn't try to use fatigue as an excuse, but he used fatigue as a fact. It's a lot of games this year. And how important is this break for recovery, for players? There is no
break with Toronto. They're playing on Saturday.
Well, there's a week. At least they don't play twice in the same week, which is almost considered a break now because the amount of times teams played twice this year is insane.
Yeah, well, TFC, of course, negotiated with the U.S. men's national team to keep Jozy Altidore and Michael Bradley off of the lineup. That was confirmed that was a negotiation, and that the U.S. decided to allow Toronto to keep those two players because of the history and the relationship that they've had with the club. So that was a positive there. But as you say, yeah, TFC look, what's their goal? They have to beat Cincinnati. So, you know, some could argue one point in their last 24 that it might be a bit of a buy anyway for TFC, but they do need to get the 3 points. Absolutely. Cincinnati's form, by the way. Ooh, one of the eight games, 1 point. That's ugly. Anyway, but it's their goal is obviously to just get their confidence back and to push through. If you look at where they are right now, they're not ideal. They are in a playoff spot, though, and they do have games in hand with the teams that are both chasing and some of the teams ahead of them. So if you're Toronto, you have to remain confident that there's more of 2017 in you than there is 2018, although it's hard to say that's possible when it's 2 years away now. But if they can push up and get, you know, win the two games that they have in hand in a lot of the teams in that mess, then they could maybe finish on top of it. And if they get fourth, then suddenly it's a much easier pathway to potentially getting to an Eastern Conference final, right? So it's the way that they got to think. That I think, and I know that that's how TFC thinks, is that they have to believe that they are, because of their top-end talent and their experience in championship games over the course of two full playoff seasons plus a CCL run, and a lot of the players are there, that they might be able to have that mentality to win when it counts. But it is increasingly difficult to make that argument from an outside perspective, of course, because we just look at the inconsistent results and, you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, right? It's a duck. TFC very much seems like, you know, we're making Toronto or Montreal's, you know, striped leopards and Toronto's quacking ducks now. The analogies will continue that way. But as I say, if it looks the way it looks, then that's probably what it is.
Yep. Let's look at the other result this weekend. Of course, Columbus-Chicago 1-1.
Doesn't really matter. Chicago needed to win. That's what I'll say to that.
They do, and they're not out of touch. Out of sight, though. I don't know why I'm quoting Hall & Oates this morning, but I guess I'm quoting Hall & Oates. FC Dallas 3, FC Cincinnati 1. Again, Cincinnati with the red card on that one. FC Dallas with a win. But the game that caught my attention was Philly-Atlanta. Well, first of all, what a cracker of a game. It was an amazing game to watch. And Philly at home putting a marker down. 3-1 against what we thought was the best team in the Eastern Conference, Atlanta. Philadelphia had something to say about that.
Sure, and Philadelphia has quietly just been the most consistent team in the East this year, and I don't think we've given them respect for that. It's because they don't, you know, Bedoya is a decent player, but there's no superstars on that team, right? There's no one that really jumps out at you and you go, oh, that's the guy, whereas you have players on you know, the other teams that have traditionally won the East over the past few years that have literally won the East the last couple of years have always had those stars, and we don't see that with Philadelphia, but yet here they are, based on consistent play throughout the year, just getting it done. And maybe we should be valuing that a bit more, because when we think, what do we keep talking about in the East? It doesn't make sense, and teams just don't grab a hold of it, right? So we have a team that has just consistently been churning along, but yet we're not respecting them. That probably says as much about us as it does about the Union, so maybe we should respect them.
We should respect them, and I did write a message underneath Jonathan Tannenwald's post on social media, be like, I erred on the side of mistake. I did not see them for what they were. I saw them for what I saw before. I do believe in Philadelphia, and I apologize.
Yeah, a lot of people still, if you look at the universal opinion on the Union, even state media and places that are inclined to think everything's lovely for everyone, have been a little bit, not down on them, but just not as high on them as the standings might indicate. You know, even I was listening to Extra Time last week, and they were talking about how they still seemed a year away from being truly a championship team. And I don't know, is it fair to say that at this point? The Atlanta win is obviously a marker for them, and good for them for getting it.
Now let's continue. Kansas City, Houston, 1-0. It's a battle of probably two teams that won't make the playoff in the Western Conference, so we're not going to dwell on this. San Jose 3, Orlando 0. We're not going to dwell on this, but another great result for San Jose. Portland 1, RSL 0. That's another good result, but New York City FC traveling to Vancouver. Vancouver at home against one of the hottest teams in the league right now, NYCFC. NYCFC getting the job done on the road, 3-1, which give them a playoff spot. Philly and New York have qualified for the playoffs. New York is second, 1 point away from the top of the Eastern Conference, but with two games in hand. versus Philadelphia. 27 games played. They have 7 games left, New York, which is a lot considering some teams like DC and Montreal have 4 left. New York City FC taking a good option on the top of the Eastern Conference, but Supporters Shield just seem way too far ahead now with the LAFC, truly dominating the overall standings. But New York, second in the East with a good option on the top if the games in hand turns out to be points.
Yeah, as you say, 3 teams now have clinched playoff spots. New York, Philadelphia, and obviously LAFC. One team eliminated in the weekend, too. Cincinnati, in case you thought they were going to go on a miracle run, that was officially eliminated.
a run for the ages. Now they're just going to run to the hills.
Yeah, it's pretty early to be eliminated in the last two. It's not been... It's, I hate to dwell on them. I feel like I'm beating up the, you know, the slow kid in class here. But well, like, they got that win early, right? They got that win in, like, what was it, week 2 or something. They got the draw against Atlanta, then they beat, who was it, Seattle they beat or something?
I think so, yeah. I don't know. It's a long time ago now, but.
Yeah, and we were all like, oh, maybe we, well, what we missed here? Well, we didn't miss anything.
We did not.
Saw the outliers early in the season. It's been pretty ugly since then.
It's been tough. Struggle's real in Cincinnati. Cincinnati, officially eliminated from the playoffs. Let's quickly finish the weekend in Major League Soccer. Seattle 4, LA Galaxy 3. A cracker of a game once again. The Galaxy, like, let's not talk about defending here. It doesn't matter. But the Galaxy always play interesting games. And Seattle 4, LA Galaxy 3. Big win for Seattle. Zlatan amazing again, but just one goal short. But the surprising result on Sunday, Minnesota United traveling to California, traveling to Bank of California Stadium to face the best team in the league, LAFC. And Minnesota gets the 2-0 win at Bank of California Stadium. That is a result.
It's certainly a very, very good result for them. Now, the one caveat to it, and I hate to put too much of a caveat in, is if you look at the lineup that LAFC put out there, they were sort of protecting a few players and resting a few players in this lineup. They'll be in the most common or the most obvious one. So there was a bit of a rotation going on because LAFC pretty much has locked and dried on turn. Locked and dried? What saying am I? I make words up all the time.
Sure.
I'm my podcaster. Anyway, locked and loaded onto the... to the Supporters Shield. So they are sort of, I think, setting themselves up for the playoff run. As much as LAFC wants to make, say brave things about how the Supporters Shield matters to them and, you know, they don't really want to worry about what happens if they don't win the playoffs, they're absolutely worried about that because they know that an MLS, to be considered one of the great teams, you have to have you don't have to have a treble, but you have to have a double. And because only one team's done a treble, sorry. And, Yeah. It's a sort of a baby treble too, because I will admit that it's probably a little more prestigious to win the U.S. Open Cup, but nonetheless.
Yeah, it is for now. Yeah. One day.
At any rate, but nonetheless, you got to win that double. You got to win the Shield MLS Cup double. Otherwise, you're just considered a good team, and people will like who won the random year 2002 MLS Cup, right? Like if I don't know, right? But we do remember who wins those great years. We remember the great Galaxy teams. We remember the early DC United teams. We remember what Toronto did, what Atlanta did. They didn't win a double, but we do remember them because they were so good in the playoffs and over 2 courses of the year. So to be considered great, you have to, I think, have that double, and they're going to set themselves up for it, as they should. But good win for Minnesota. I sort of that. We just talked about L.A. for 5 minutes after Minnesota won.
Exactly. But I do congratulate Minnesota. Minnesota is having their best season ever right now. And I don't think it's even a debate. Let's take a look at the Western Conference standings before we move on to Europe. LAFC, 62 points, 2.21 points per game average, 28 games played, 6 games left. A home record of 11-1-2. Minnesota, the only team to beat LAFC at Bank of California Stadium in 2019, which is not a small feat. Seattle, second in the Western Conference with 46 points. That's a 16-point drop between 1 and 2 in the Western Conference, which is amazing, Dwayne. Minnesota, third. San Jose Earthquake, fourth. Now, If you go back to the beginning of the season, Dwayne, and I tell you Minnesota and San Jose will be the top four of the Western Conference with a month left in the season, what kind of crazy would you have called me?
Well, I wouldn't have called you that because that would be rude, but I would have suggested that maybe you reevaluate things.
Maybe stop drinking or something, you would have told me. I don't know, but that would have been fitting.
Intervention, yeah. Minnesota, you could have bought it. There were some people that were picking them in. I don't think anyone was picking them that high, but yeah, San Jose has been clearly. And look, I think San Jose is legitimately, and when we get closer to the playoffs, obviously we'll do a playoff preview, but if San Jose can keep up there and get in there, they could really be that wrench in things in the playoffs because they are so unorthodox, right? That maybe they will be even a one game situation, be able to pull a big upset. And that's, we don't know. This is the great sort of unknown about this season is that we don't know what the single game knockout's going to mean. We assume it's going to be an advantage to the tire teams, but we don't know that. MLS is a strange league. It's a league that, it's one of the few leagues in the world where possession doesn't correlate with winning. That often teams that struggle with possession, my struggle is the wrong way to put it, that tend to not have more possession than their opponent, tend to win in MLS, and that's different than most of the rest of the world. So yeah, you think about how teams set up in the playoffs, you know, that sort of low block pounce or medium block pounce might be an effective strategy, and you can see upsets happening on the road. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But
you mentioned struggling in possession. Yeah, you clearly watched the Montreal Impact game on Saturday. That was DC's entire game plan. Let's give the ball to Montreal. Let's give him loose, and they'll strangle themselves with their own loop, with their own rope, which is literally what Montreal do. So some teams in Major League Soccer do struggle with possession. That is a fact. But I'm just making jokes here on a Tuesday night.
Well, it's because it makes sense because MLS teams build themselves the way the league's set up. They make big money spending, and let's be blunt here. A lot of that big money spending is at expense of other parts of the roster, and they typically are going to spend big on players that are going to also sell tickets. Those players are offensive players. They're not defensive players. So when you are trying to possess, and you have guys that just play a solid block, then all of a sudden, if you break through and get a little space, you're running at guys with your own skill players that aren't as good, and that's why. But this is why a lot of people think that MLS should scrap their Tam Gam DP kind of stuff and instead just, you know, increase the cap to a certain level. Because you have more balanced teams.
So you can build a team, a project fully and not just build a project on the left wing and then make sure that the rest of the team doesn't jeopardize the idea of playing from that left wing. Montreal Olympiadi. Just saying. But Tuesdays are for Europe. 30 minutes in, we haven't talked about the all continent. We'll quickly talk about the three games that we've talked about Friday. Our weekend preview was, of course, the North London Derby between Arsenal versus Tottenham. We had the Old Firm Derby as well, and we had the Derby of the two best teams in Serie A. Let's start with the North London Derby, the most boring of those three games this weekend. Boring, not necessarily boring as in boring, but the result is a bit boring. 2-2. Between the two North London teams.
Well, I mean, I think it tells us a little bit about a team in Spurs that we thought was going to be, off of the heels of the European Championship final or European final appearance, a Champions League final appearance, a solid season in the Premier League. We thought that they were going to maybe push the top two in the Premier League, and we haven't seen evidence of that yet. Against their great rivals when they, for the first time in a long time, were really considerable favorites in that matchup, for them to not be able to hold on to a lead and for them to allow Arsenal to come back in that game, I think is, that is 1 point gained by Arsenal, 2 points lost by Spurs, is what I would say in that matchup. And I think that tells us a little bit about the potential of there being a three-team title race. And that potential, I think, even though we're sitting here on September 3rd.
Yeah, week four.
I'm still ready to say that it's a two-team title race.
Well, I'm ready to concede, at least for my team. I'm ready to say Chelsea ain't winning the league this year. It's week number four.
I don't know if Chelsea's making Europe this year.
Well, is Europa's Europe, right? Europa's in Europe.
Well, like, I meant that, though, because Wolves looks okay. So,
Man U, though. Damn. But let's not talk about Man U. We'll talk about the rest of the week. We have a quiet day because of the international break. The other great game that happened, the Old Firm Derby on Sunday, Celtic Rangers. Well, it's actually Rangers Celtic. It was in Glasgow. It was in Glasgow.
Okay, go ahead.
Both teams are from the same city, I know. But Rangers 0, Celtics 2. I guess Celtics are still better.
Yeah, Celtic is, they are still better. And I think that if there was any doubt about that, that the Old Firm sort of stretched it out. But Rangers wasn't bad in the game. I was only able to see extended highlights of it. Very difficult to find here. I mean,
because even our illegal streams, you are hard to find for that one. Which is, come on, DAZN and One Soccer, get on it. I don't think it'll cost you that much to get the Scottish Premier League on your platform.
I could have bought it for £15. It was £7.95 I could have paid to watch it legally.
To watch a game, £7.95? No. I'm not doing that.
Almost $15 Canadian. So I was like, yeah, I don't know about that because I don't even know if it's going to work, right? Like sometimes you buy those legal things and it's like there's like One Soccer this weekend. With all due respect, I was watching a replay of a Calgary playing Pacific and it was like going off and on. And like, I pay for that. So, you know, you got to be careful. I'm not going to pay $15 for one game is what I'm saying. And don't worry about the KMPL. We're going to talk about 8-0 in about a couple hours here. But
yes,
regardless, Calgary beat Winnipeg 8-0 in the CPL. And this is a league that's supposed to be about a little bit of parity. So anyway.
Oh, I guess there's no parity between those two. So
Celtic, we're talking about the Old Firm. Yes, exactly. It was a marker. Like Celtic, they're 10 in a row is in there. I don't know if there's going to be much of a title race. But I do think what we have seen, Kevin, before I let you jump back in, is that the Rangers has, in the last 18 months or so, sort of reestablished itself as the clear number two. And if there's going to be a true reemergence of the Scottish Premier League, and one of the reasons we probably can't see it here legally is no one pays attention to it anymore because it's a one-team league. And they need, as much as they will hate to admit it, those two clubs need each other to be good. Because if they're not, if one of them is not, then it's, you know, yay, they get their little win over them. But what kind of victory is it after 10 straight years, right?
So, Dwayne, if Batman only had to stop thieves in the street every day, Batman would not have been a superhero. He would be a policeman. He needed the Joker. Because Batman stops crazy guys like the Joker, he's a hero, a superhero. If you beat Third Lanark 10 times in a row, no one cares. But if you beat Rangers twice in your season and you win the trophy or vice versa, it just feels a little better.
There you go, yeah. I hope they beat Third Lanark. But they need some more competition in that league. I mean, and it's got to be like, it just hits you everywhere down the line. I mean, I don't think this is a controversial statement here, but players don't want to go there anymore. Like, they just don't, because what's the point?
Outside of living there and being called Scott Arfield and having a good money offer from your childhood club, not a lot of people does the same. I would say same move.
If you're Scottish, for sure, and you supported one of those teams, for sure. But yeah, there's not a lot of reason. And look, you're seeing it at the Champions League too, in Europe, when they try to compete in Europe, they don't anymore because they're not getting pushed. This is Celtic I'm talking about. They're not getting pushed day to day. So they need each other. They got to be frenemies. They need their frenemy back, really.
And we'll see probably happen or continue to happen over the next few weeks. Let's finish the show with the game of the weekend. The cracker of a game. 4-3 for Juve versus Napoli. Quite an entertaining game with the old lady winning at home.
Again, it's an indication of a club that is winning Serie A year after year after year, that there was some hope that there might be a little bit of vulnerability this year. And look, they got the job done. 4-3, though, that suggests that there was a little bit of pushback from Napoli's side here. Entertaining game, as you say. People that think that Serie A is defensively only are going to have trouble to, you know, explaining that away, 7 goals.
And Chucky Lozano, the first Mexican player in his debut, scored for Napoli. The first ever Mexican player to score in Serie A for Chucky Irving Lozano, or Irving Chucky Lozano, one of the best players coming out of Mexico in the last couple of years.
Yeah, no, look, I watched that game. It was entertaining. It was fun. Juve is a very good team. They play a good villain, too, even right down to the, you know, their love or hate team, right? Like, you either love Juve or you hate Juve, and there's not a lot in between. It's the same with Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Love or hate, and that's just as a player. I'm not saying anything about his legal issues that, or alleged legal issues that are out there as well, which is a whole different topic. But yeah, they add that villainary to it, and hopefully you can get a title race there. I know a lot of people are hopeful that Inter can step up and push them this year. I think we've seen some movement at the other side of Milan, and I truly believe that that's the key to Serie A getting back to where it once was, is for those two Milan clubs. Yeah. And again, they're love or hate teams too.
Speaking of that. Oh, sorry, just finish your thought.
I was going to say, I think we need Milan. You need that second city to step up and push them. And then you have Napoli as your wild card in there. And then Serie A all of a sudden is a very compelling league. But when it's just Juve grinding it out, it's the problem across Europe right now, right? Yeah. And that's the Champions League money playing a role too. Like, the deeper you go, the more you get, and the more you solidify your strength at the top. And this is a topic for another day, but the Champions League is especially damaging to those mid-level leagues where you have the single league team that keeps qualifying every year, because then they can just sort of crush the ants in their own league, but they don't get better themselves because they're crushing ants, right? We just talked about it with Scotland
a little bit.
No, they're not going deep in Champions League.
No. And when we say crushing ants, we're not talking about Javinko not getting success and not playing in Serie A.
I'll talk to the Saudi League on here.
I know. But the other thing I want to talk about for Serie A, but this might be a topic for a full show another day, is the racist fans of Cagliari, which is the fourth documented incident in 4 years with them insulting and sending out racist behavior, racist noise, racist cries towards a player. This time it was directed at Romelu Lukaku playing for Inter in the game this weekend. The Cagliari fans is the fourth incident, if not fifth incident in a row, and one at least once a year this time period. Well, we need to talk about this because something needs to be done, but the racism of the Cagliari fans, at this point, it's not a coincidence and it's not an isolated incident either. So what should be done? You just close games, eight close games or something. The sanction has to be very heavy. Otherwise, we're just going to continue to see it happen like we are.
You're right. It needs to be a full topic for a show where we're not talking about games and scoreboard stuff, because this is beyond scoreboard, obviously. But to TLDR your answer, what needs to happen is the club needs to be equally punished as the fans. You can't just ban fans. You can't just even stuff like suspending games or closing the doors, to me, isn't enough. I think you have to start docking points if it's continuing at the same teams over and over again. That's the only way that those teams are going to learn the lesson, because to me it's systemic. When it keeps happening in the same place, then someone at that club doesn't give a you know what about this and probably shares the views. So at that point, screw them. You got to start knocking them points. At least cynically, they will then step up to stop it. Even if it's just about protecting their own point totals, their own club's standing in Serie A, then that's the thing. And I mean, Serie A is particularly hit by this. We have other parts of the world aren't immune, obviously. We've seen games stopped in France this year because of the rule that was instituted there that if the referee hears it, he can suspend the game. It's happened. They've literally started to do it there. So bravo to France for doing that. We need the rest of the world to take this seriously, because I'm sick of talking about stuff like this, and it does really hurt the image, especially of Serie A. And as much as people think that it's dull or whatever, the big reason people don't follow Serie A is this crap too. It's hard to really get into it that way.
Serie A is like 10 years behind. I'm not talking about technologically. I'm just thinking about social, kind of social awareness, social consciousness. It's a bit behind the times. And when you have pushback on fans saying we're allowed to have our liberty of expression, you are to a effing point. And that point becomes you can't insult anyone else. And you cannot necessarily be racist. And racist, you cannot be racist in 2019 in a public setting. So, dock points, ban fans, ban players, do something. Because we are going to talk about this probably tomorrow, but not even today. But I thought it was at least worth a mention today. And we have to start the thought process of what to do. Well, what would you do if this happened in your stadium? What would I do if I am witness to this at the Montreal Impact Stadium with fans and yelling at a, yeah, what would you think then? And that heavy of a fine should be applied to what's going on in Italy. You have to put yourself in the same situation to understand and to get the emotional response that you would get if you were involved. And it's hard for us to even put ourselves in that in these type of shoes. But I think it's time we do something about it as a collectivity, as a UEFA or FIFA. And I know I'm asking a lot for those two governing bodies that are not usually to the left, right? They're usually more where their money is. But I think it's time that, at least in Italy, with this team, because it's a repeat offense. It's a repeat offender. Cagliari fans in the stands are repeat offenders when it comes to yelling racist insults at players.
Yeah. Yeah, better topic to go for a full show on, but quickly, you mentioned something, what would you do in the stands? And the one thing I do want to say lastly today is that I don't like this, like, fans have to police it stuff. Because that's just dangerous, right? You don't want
it is.
And stuff. It's got to be up to the clubs.
Yeah, but if it happens in my stadium, I'm going to at least voice my...
expected to.
Oh, no. I'm not going to do anything now. I mean, I'm going to voice my concerns to the club, you know? If I'm a season ticket holder of Cagliari and I see this happen, I'm communicating with my representative on the same day or the day after, be like, dude, I saw this and this is not worth it. What's the club's plans to do against it? And if you don't deal with it, I'm just not going to renew. And I think that's more fans should, that's what I mean when your emotional response is that, is if you see with your own eyes, is there a protocol? Do you have a number to call? Do you have a way to make sure you can convey your unhappiness and your anti-racist ideology, which is not even an ideology. What's 2019? Racism is not okay, period. I don't care what side of political spectrum you're on. It's not a political issue. It's a social equality issue. And it's not an issue. Don't do it. That's basically it.
Fair enough. It's hard to argue with that.
And on that note, I think it's time we say goodbye for today, Dwayne. You can follow Dwayne at 24th Minute and myself at Kev Laramie. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of The World of Football with a Soccer Perspective. You'd like to hear Dwayne and I talk about Canadian soccer? Make sure you subscribe and take the $2 pledge of the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, where four times a month you'll get an exclusive show with actors of the Canadian soccer world. It is being recorded a bit later today, and joining us for the first time, Canadian soccer legend and part owner of Pacific FC, Mr. Rob Friend, will be joining us on the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast later today. And until then, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Larmé. We wish you a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.